Oh, the shape up will get. You've let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you except for those two have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Team 33. Endicott here with you for the next hour or so. Coming up on tonight's show, we are continuing our search for the greatest football film of all time. And tonight, it is Mean Machine, the 2001 film starring Vinnie Jones and Jason Statham. A brilliant film. If you do want to listen back to any of the show, you can find us as part of the OTP Podcast Network. You can find us on offtheball.com or on the new shiny OTP app. You can find that in the App Store or the Google Play Store. And this is also on YouTube if you want to see our pretty little faces review Mean Machine. But first, it is a massive week because the Premier League is back, going out on your screens right now as you listen to the show. Chelsea and United are facing off. Hopefully Manchester United are in the lead. But during the week, we had some games, and Kieran Bradley, Ronan Mullen, you are on the line to discuss that as well. How are you getting on, lads?
All good,
man. How are you?
So what do we make of the return of the Premier League? I know the Bundesliga has been back for a couple of weeks, so we kind of knew what it was going to look like, but what do we make of English football's return? Ronan?
Well, I don't know if you saw the trailer for Palm Springs, Enda, have you? It's the new film with Andy Samberg and Christian Milioti, who is the mother from How I Met Your Mother. Spoiler alert. But basically, it's this whole infinity loop thing. And I was sitting there watching Arsenal against Man City, feeling like I was in an infinity loop, because I feel like I've seen that game, that exact game, play out about 10 times at this stage, where Arsenal just play into Man City's hands and David Luiz, he's just David Luiz. He does something stupid. But I do think like his cataclysmic performance has sort of taken the attention away from everything else, because they would have found a way to lose that in that manner regardless of what he did. Do you know what I mean? And then go on, sorry.
Can you have a spoiler alert for a show that ended 6 years ago?
That's the thing.
That's the main point I'm taking. I've ignored everything you've said about the Man City game now that you brought How I Met Your Mother into it, because I've watched that show about maybe the full way through three times, and every time the ending disappoints me, much like David Luiz, his performance disappointed everyone. Kieran Bradley, the face you just made makes me feel like you're disappointed in me.
Oh yeah, I'm relentlessly disappointed in you, but you just give me a new reason every time, which is very nice of it. It was very nice having it back. I'm completely on the same page as Ronan. I just genuinely think that it's the most boring fixture in the calendar, particularly among the kind of top 5-6 teams. City just roll them over, and it's just funny. I mean, David Luiz is in the midst of a contract renegotiation, and then just goes, hold my beer while I turn in one of the worst performances. Yeah, it was nice having it back, but it's good to have a few talking points, and solely from a selfish point of view, it's nice for us to have a little bit of sweet, delicious content back in the mix.
Yeah, ESPN, they do a show on Extra Time on YouTube with Steve Nichol and some of their other hosts, and they had a segment after that game saying, can Arsenal sue Chelsea for how bad David Luiz has been on his loan spell for them? It's been really, really bad. And to be fair, I don't think anybody expected David Luiz to come in and be the hero that solves Arsenal's problems. One topic that came up during the game between me and my housemates was, are Arsenal a big team anymore? Are they actually, can they consider themselves a big club anymore? Without getting too clickbaity or ranking your best teams, Arsenal haven't won the league since 2004. Can they really consider themselves as one of the title contenders?
I think there's something to that, in the sense that the days of them being an automatic challenger for league titles, those days have come and gone for me. I think that John Giles was on last night, for example, talking about they need to get back to where they were. But I do think that their default setting is like challenging for top four, and they need to get back just to that staging post before they can even have aspirations of challenging for the title, because I can't even remember the last time they were in the mix, really.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. And if you look at the record, Arsene Wenger turned them into title challengers, but before that, they weren't really a top two side, because if you look at, I know they are the third most successful club in England when it comes to trophies, But out of the 13 league titles they've won, seven of those came before 1955. But we're not here to talk about the Premier League. We're talking about football films and this film in particular.
At London Crown Court this morning, ex-England football captain Danny Meehan was jailed for 3 years.
Not dangerous, are you, Mr. Footballer?
Only if you've got the boldness.
Governor wants you to coach my football team.
Just want to do my time and get on with my life.
If you don't play ball, you could be with us for some time.
Listen, tell the governor the best way to train the guards is to play a really tough match against a team of cons.
Could be win-win for everybody.
What we need is 11 men to play as a team. Right?
Right!
Yes! It's lovely, Danny, will it? What's that?
I'm your manager.
Since when?
Massive is your man.
We still need a goalkeeper.
The legendary Monk.
That dude is beyond mental.
I heard he ate Hannibal the Cannibal.
Hello, Mr. Monk. Can you play football? We're playing the guards.
I'm with you.
Let's win, and let's win well.
It's getting hot out there, Bob.
Oh, yeah, Bob. Very Rio de Janeiro.
Lose, and they'll never let you forget it.
Go! Oh. Is that all right, though, Dan, yeah?
Cream.
All right, lads. You want to be nothing. Numbers, prisoners, that's fine. Run your guts out, and you'll have something in here they can never touch.
We'll give you a match.
You'll give us a game. Doubt whether you can match us.
Come on!
Just look at our boys decked out all in black.
Very haute couture.
No, it's definitely black, Bob.
Boy, Mr. Sykes. You look the part. All you need now is a...
I think it's in everyone's interest if you lose this game.
I can't do that.
You're unbelievable.
Still 0-0, but if this was boxing, the mean machine would be head on point.
So you get out there and hurt some people.
Ronan, I know you in particular were excited to get to this film. How did you find it on second viewing?
Oh, it's a triumphal piece of cinema, isn't it? It's, are there scene imitations directly from The Longest Yard? Sure. Is the casting just a series of people playing characters that are very similar to their real life personalities? Absolutely. But like in the age of Uber streaming, you can imagine just the strands in this film would be spread out over the course of 10-hour series. Whereas in the space of about 90 minutes of screen time, excluding the like end screen credits and all that kind of stuff. Like Danny Meehan alone, I've just jotted down a couple of things they managed to cover with this character. Okay, so straight out the gate, Anglo-German betrayal, treason, the fall of an icon, right? The road to redemption, police brutality, railing against institutional racial prejudice. He survives a murder attempt. He develops a love interest. At least three arch nemeses. I'm open to correction. I counted at least three. A best friend, a father figure, a protege, before ultimately going from hero to zero, back to hero again in a matter of minutes in the closing sequence there. So try and tell me this isn't the greatest football film ever made, because it clearly is.
How did it not win an Oscar? That's what I'm thinking. Like, I mean, you just covered everything, every base. Why are we bothering to record any more of this show? We'll just put that out as the main event, the main promo, a three-minute show of Ronan Mullen just summing it up. It's over.
And like we'll get to it, I'm sure, but I thought some of the footballing sequences, and it's kind of borne out by the fact that a couple of the players, like the extras on both sets of teams, are former footballers, because some of the preamble, you know, interpassing and all that kind of stuff is actually pretty good compared to some of the higher budget football films. So I think it wins on all fronts. I'm open to everyone else's opinions, but I'm just setting my stall out early doors here.
Well, you see, we spoke about this on the shows over the last couple of weeks about how football is portrayed in the films. And some of them have been cringy, some of them have been pretty decent. This one is good, but sort of the reasoning behind why they put nutmegs and bicycle kicks and dramatics that don't usually happen in football matches in these films is the Hollywood effect. You know, you have to reach that American audience somehow. And most noticeably about this film is they don't actually do that. If you look at the box office record, this did brilliantly in England. but horribly in America. It was a complete flop in America because obviously people were comparing it with The Longest Yard from the 1970s. And again, it is followed on by a remake of that Longest Yard film by Adam Sandler. Kieran, what did you make of this film in second viewing?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it actually. Like when it was presented that we would be doing this, I was a little bit like, oh God. But I enjoyed it a little bit more, and it's actually a little bit darker in places than I seem to remember as well. I completely forgot one particular spoiler alert, the bomb going off.
Yeah,
so good grief. When did this happen? But it was good. And look, you're talking about Americans, like the American audience, they're going to have zero interest in this for several reasons. A, that it's a football film. B, that Vinnie Jones is an absolute nobody in their eyes. But for an English audience, I remember being at school and it coming out, and everyone was, you know, similar with Mike Bassett, everyone was kind of interested in watching it. But it was better on second viewing than first, I'll give it that.
Yeah, and I mean, this is Vinnie Jones, the ex-professional footballer turned actor, and I suppose his debut would have been in Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels by Guy Ritchie. Guy Ritchie is an executive producer on this film, and you can tell by the cast because it's basically just the cast of that film. And this is his first sort of movie as a main star. He does pretty well. I mean, we'll get into him in more detail now in a second, but as an overall film, I thought this was brilliant. But the one thing I couldn't get around was, like, The Longest Yard by Adam Sandler obviously came out more recently than this film, so it's quicker to mind, and I actually watched that too many times for my own good. But if you played those two films side by side, it's just American and English. If you played it, I'm not sure what the timelines are like, but it's almost word for word in terms of the scenes, how they go and how the film plays out. It's such a bizarre coincidence. Well, it's not really a coincidence. They based it on it, but you'd think that they would have sort of tailed away from the storyline a little bit, but it's the exact same thing. Am I wrong?
Well, they basically they owed us one, I think, for the American office. I just cribbing the entire UK office script for the first series.
Don't go in there.
But it was. I must admit, I haven't actually seen The Longest Yard, but
you haven't seen Adam Sandler.
No,
really?
I haven't. No. Well, maybe we can do that next week. But what was I going to say? The situation with regard to the timing, like as you say, what came out in 2001, I think.
Yeah, 2001.
This one. And this was this was the first movie to my mind that Vinnie Jones had actually a leading role. So obviously that's a big deal. Like, I mean, he was playing bit part characters, fairly, you know, strong characters in Lock, Stock and Snatch. But this was like the first time he was carrying the film. And I actually think he did it pretty well. Like I've always factored in, it's like, oh, well, it's Vinnie Jones, so he's a footballer turned actor, so it's not going to be especially good. But he's good. Like, he's a good comic actor as well. He's got the little bit of timing. He's got the looks and stuff like this, like the looks to camera and the looks to the other cast. And as you say, like the who's who of English, like English actors, and particularly English hard actors, like Mr. Ratchet, the ginger guy who's basically who is Wacker from Mike Bassett. I mean, he has built a career, and I imagine a pretty nice house off the back of having like a face like a clenched fist. So he's done pretty well out of it.
Where were we in the Jason Statham career trajectory at this point? Because it's a very bit part role. Granted, he's given huge publicity within the film in the sense that he's a known commodity all around the prison, but it's not as if he's one of the main cast members, I wouldn't have said. So, like, was he still a quite unknown actor at this stage in 2001?
I think he was post-Snatch, and I think this was pre-kind of Transporter and going into action films on his own, I believe, but I might be wrong in that. But, like, best supporting actor role should basically go to his six-pack when he's initially introduced. Like, it's amazing. But he plays a kind of fairly one-dimensional character, but he's, did it well, I thought.
Right then, let's get into the cast. We've already spoken about him. Vinnie Jones as Danny, the Mean Machine Meehan. He is an ex-England captain, the story behind him, as Ronan has pointed out. Former England captain, sold out the English national team against Germany, by fixing a game, or so we hear, allegedly is the key word. I can't confirm whether he actually did or not, by giving away a penalty, controversial one, and he was banned from football. And then we are introduced to him by he's drinking in the house, and then he decides to go for a little detour down to the pub in the car, and the police come in. He assaults the police. Long story short, he's thrown into Long Kesh prison for 3 years. That's within 30 seconds. That's we know his name, we know what his background is, and we know how he got to prison. 30 seconds. Well, this film doesn't mess about.
Let me say one thing very quickly. If the captain of the England side, sorry, I didn't mean to cut across. If the captain of the England side was interned in Long Kesh, we would have had a very, very different film on our hands. sorry, Renegade.
No, I was just going to say, as Enda pointed out there, like if this was a series on Netflix, they would have spent the entire first episode detailing his fall from grace. Whereas here, you're told the entire backstory in a matter of 90 seconds, and before you know it, he's in jail just like that. So, just a blistering start of this film. And
it's brilliant, but Vinnie Jones in particular. So, as Kieran mentioned, this is his first proper leading role as an actor, and to be fair, he doesn't shy away from it. I think he's actually quite good in it. What is interesting about his character in this, though, is that it sort of goes away until the midpoint where they just kind of abandon that, but it sort of goes away from the hard man figure that we're used to seeing in Vinnie Jones. He doesn't want any trouble, he just wants to do his time, he's not really giving any cheek, but we do see this dark side to him when he starts assaulting police officers, and then the weird fist fight in the middle of the film that doesn't make sense through the plot. But Vinnie Jones pretty good in this run.
Yeah, I didn't get the boxing match in the middle. What is that, a known prison thing? Like, what's the value of not just like circling the two lads and letting them have a proper boxing match? I didn't get the makeup of that. I don't know if that predates this film, but I didn't really understand that. Vinnie Jones, absolutely, he holds his own. I don't know at what point he became, like, he was probably footballer turned actor, but now firmly in my mind anyway, he's an actor who used to be a footballer. And this probably still sticks out as, I know it was his first leading role, but he just carries it so well, and good comic timing, as Kieran said there. Obviously, he's got sort of the handsome thing where they can put him on all the posters and it can sell in America. Obviously, didn't do overly well at the box office, but it's not someone people would be shy to put in a poster, I presume. And yeah, I thought very solid and got through an awful lot, as I detailed at the top. There was a lot of different strands he had to capture, and I thought he did pretty well. A good supporting cast as well, strong throughout.
Did Vinnie Jones show more footballing skill in this film than he did throughout his entire career? Because we see several cutaway scenes of him doing keepy uppies, flicking it onto his head, catching it on his neck. He starred in the best Umbro ad of all time, where he's playing James Bond sort of esque character, which is, I actually forgot to mention that. We'll get to it when we get to the scenes, but that's one of the best scenes in any film I've ever seen, and it's definitely an ad that Umbro should have went ahead with. It was absolutely phenomenal. So David Kelly is Doc, the old-timey figure in the prison who starts to give advice to Vinnie Jones, to Danny Meehan, about the prison, who runs stuff, and general how to get along without going along. What did we make of David Kelly? He does well to hold his Irish accent throughout the entire film, and he's got that sweet old man character down. Oh, but
it's unashamedly read from Shawshank Redemption. That's exactly what this is. But I'm just glad he does carry it very well. The little bit, like the little nuance where he reveals why he's in there, that's a weirdly emotional scene in the middle of an otherwise non-emotional film, but I thought he delivered it very well and it was good. But then, as we mentioned at the top, the bit where he's killed, I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself here, Enda, but why were they trying to bomb Vinnie Jones' character? I don't understand what the need to go to that extreme. Like, it's transfer him to a different prison.
I just imagine the prison guard going back being like, I just thought you'd take him, like, take his knee or something. Like, why did you didn't need to blow him up?
Push him down the stairs.
By the way, on a Sorry, on a similar point here, the man who plays Nitro, who is the most disgusting actor because he's constantly fucking dribbling and spitting everywhere. How did that role not go to Stephen Graham? Like, the Scouse actor from Snatch and many other things, Al Capone now, but it's like there was already that existing relationship there. Stephen Graham has this mental that's in him. I'm surprised he didn't get the nod for that one.
What you want me to do? You want me to blow up an old man, is it?
Just an old man, is it? Just an old man.
Listen, we're talking about hardened criminals here. We're not talking about the average Joes. This is long cash prison, you know? They're not in there for robbing a packet of crisps.
No, it's true.
But let's focus on Doc for a second, because as you mentioned, Ron, you kind of vaguely mentioned his background story. So he's the oldest member of the prison, and he basically says that, you know, he's not in there for something small. He's a really, really dark character, because they paint him as this really nice old man that learned from his old ways. But he bombed he threw a grenade into a hotel room with a baby and a wife in it. That's a pretty bad crowd.
Is this the most sympathetic portrayal of a child killer we've ever seen in a football film? Can I just ask one thing on David Kelly? Because I recognise him from a good few things, but usually from English TV. So I don't know if that is his accent. And, like, is he hamming it up? Again, I'm not sure if you guys know, but is he kind of tied in the wool dub?
Yeah, he's from Goatstown in Dublin. And he would have done, I think most of his acting would have been done on stage. I think he came through the Gaiety School anyway, but as you said, he's like a known face. He's sort of like that guy in a lot of stuff where you're like, oh yeah, I remember him, he was in Mean Machine. But I don't think he didn't quite get to the Morgan Freeman level post Shawshank Redemption, but he had a solid career. Rest in peace, David Kelly.
Imagine having been stopped on the street soon after this, being like, hey, you're the guy from Mean Machine, and he's like, yeah, I've actually done quite a lot about the Shakespearean stuff, but thanks.
Are you saying this is his apex mountain to rob a phrase from another film review podcast run? Is that what you're saying? This is David Kelly's apex mountain?
I don't know what you're talking about in terms of that reference, but it has to be right up there, you know? Right up there.
So we also mentioned Jason Statham, the monk, as he is described in this film, or that's his name in this film, his nickname. We don't actually, not really sure if they give us his real name throughout the entire film. He's just known as the monk. Killed 23 men with his bare hands before he learned karate. Pretty hardened criminal.
Legend.
What do we make of Jason Statham's Scottish accent in this? I think it's pretty terrible.
It's appalling. It's considering it's terrible, he only had about 6 lines to recite, he couldn't even master them. And most of them were about 3 words long. Not great, but, you know, he delivers on the action sequences, and I'm sure that's why he was brought in.
Yeah, like, and I know there's the whole cliche that you have to be crazy to be a goalkeeper, but he kind of takes it to the further extreme. And to be fair, he's so reckless on the pitch. He could have given away 2 to 3 goals easily later on in the game. But in terms of his character, we never actually found out what he's done. We just, like, the 23 men with his bare hands, that's just... Like, that's a rumor. That's just one of those rumors that people make up in prison. Like, we never actually found out what he's done to deserve to be in solitary in this really hardened criminal or really hardened prison. So it must have been really bad. And if we're getting back to the whole sympathizing with the prisoners in this film, he's right up there.
Yeah, I think, well, they've kind of got him down this like Charles Bronson route. You know, Charles Bronson, the kind of UK's, it's the tabloid's favourite, like UK's most dangerous man, but he spent like the last 40 years in solitary despite going in for basically robbing someone's purse. It's just like, he's the archetypal become institutionalized person. But yeah, his accent is pretty bad. And like, to be honest, every time he's on the screen, I was just like, oh, let's wrap this up and get back to the action, because I'm just tired of seeing these sequences of him, you know, just jacking people left, right and center.
Did you just know Jason Statham was an Olympic athlete for the UK?
Yeah, I only found this out when I was kind of researching this. I had no idea, no, but it was for diving, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an Olympic diver. It's one of the weirder side stories to an actor I've ever heard, because I didn't know this until I was looking into it as well. It doesn't really make sense. Like, if you put his characters in most of his films and then say he was an Olympic diver, it doesn't add up for me.
Yeah, it's only bloody Vinnie Jones that's taking a dive in this film. You know what I mean?
Oh,
yeah.
That's not making the cut. I'm sorry. That's straight out of this. But we haven't touched on. Sorry to interrupt, Karen, but we haven't touched on the star of this film yet, and he's possibly the greatest British actor slash presenter slash madman, Danny Dyer.
There we go.
Danny Dyer. Any film with Danny Dyer in it is already a 10 out of 10. He plays Billy the Limpet, a sort of nervous, he's sort of the goofy character of this film, some comedic value. Terrible on the like in training, but then pulls off some of the best skills in the entire game. So Danny Dyer, he's very young in this film, but he's still Danny Dyer though. Kieran, I know you're a big fan.
Yeah, well, you know, like Ronan was saying earlier, they basically picked actors from other roles and just put them in and said, do that role, just do it in prison. And it was like, do you ever see Human Traffic? He plays your Moff, is it, in Human Traffic? And he plays exactly the same kind of like drippy character in this. But yeah, he's boyish. I'll give him that in this film. He's very enthusiastic, and he's got a nice little bromance going with Billy Jones at the end, and obviously has the last laugh. But I love Danny Dyer. I think early on in his career, probably a little bit post this, everyone was a bit sneery towards him because they thought that he wasn't sort of somewhat self-aware. Like he's a legit Cockney. Like he's from Canning Town Flats, which is not like, you know, the most salubrious part of town. But he is someone that doesn't take himself too seriously, and he kind of plays up, and it comes across a lot in his roles. Like he's quite self-effacing, and I think he did really, you know, it was a really, really enjoyable watch.
Yeah, there's quite a few characters in this film that actually get a lot of screen time, and it's spread out a lot because I'm just looking at the cast list here, and they actually all play a fairly big role in the film. Vaz Blackwood is massive. He's the sort of the side character, right-hand man to Vinnie Jones as soon as he goes into the prison. You have Nitro, who, as we mentioned, murders an old man in the middle of the film for no reason. David Hemmings plays the governor of the prison, which is a key role, and I think we might focus on him in a second. Rocky Marshall is Siggs, the guy who in the background runs the entire prison. You have Robbie G as Trojan, who's the best footballer by a country mile on the pitch and really good actor in terms of his footballing ability. John Forgerman as Sykes, one of the more horrible people in the film. And Jeff Bell as Ratchet, one of the most despicable prison wardens you'll ever see in your life. So we'll focus on David Hemmings as the governor. If you compare him to the other wardens in, say, The Shawshank Redemption, I'm putting this film up with The Shawshank Redemption, by the way, in terms of prison films, or okay, the other governor in The Longest Yard, David Hemmings is very, very good in this film and probably too big for the role.
Ah, he's brilliant. And I can just imagine the casting discussion around the round table. It's like, He's evil looking, but he's not evil looking enough. What can we do? It's like, oh, let's wax his eyebrows outward so that he looks even more despicable. And that it works a treat, because immediately you just know, even if there's no volume, you just look at him, you know, he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And they gave him a nice little backstory as well, his gambling debt and all that kind of stuff, and the motives for his actions. So yeah, that's another kind of reasonably well developed character given the time constraints, and sets up the closing sequence quite nicely.
I thought his eyebrows were just like that anyway.
Yeah, he has those eyebrows in Gladiator as well. So yeah. I don't know if his, you know, headshots are literally just eyebrow shots that he sends across, and he's like, "Well, these, you know, get involved." Yeah. But yeah, he's a good. It's funny because he's so obviously like a classically trained actor, and you know, used to treading the boards or whatever. That this it actually provides quite a nice little contrast, because you get this little sort of upper class, working class, class warfare thing going on. But yeah, I thought he was very good in that.
And finally, Vaz Blackwood, before we take a quick break, he plays Massive, the right hand man. Quite a good performance. He'd a little bit lacking on the character development in terms of his background story, why he's there. All we know is he's the guy who can get things, but he didn't actually end up getting anything for anybody in this film. He's like Chris Rock plays this character in The Longest Yard, and he has the ability of getting certain things for Adam Sandler in the prison, and they actually show that happening. But in terms of Massive, he doesn't really do much in this film except for manage the team.
Yeah, just sort of your typical jovial second in command, which isn't unique just to sports films. You see it in a lot of films, and I think he does the role quite well. I just wonder, from the character himself, is he wondering why he's not on the team? Like, come on. Massive was playing football in the hall there before he got beaten up a little bit. And I think he probably thought, should I be manager or should I at least be player manager? He didn't even give himself the chance to come on there when Vinnie Jones threw his toys out of the pram. So I think the character was a key component of the film. It probably wouldn't have been the same without him.
Yeah, like, I mean, overall, I think the cast do an excellent job in this film, considering the time constraints, because we are talking about a classic hour and a half film here that really flies through the different plot points. We do want to talk about some of the best scenes in this film and some more of the plot holes as well. So stay tuned. Coming up after the break, we will discuss the best scenes in Mean Machine. Now, welcome back to Team 33, and a call here with you, and I'm joined on the line by Kieran Bradley and Ronan Mullen, because we are talking about Mean Machine, the 2001 film starring Vinnie Jones. Lads, we talked about the cast before the break. We enjoyed it very much so far. I do want to talk about the plot, because it really flies through it, as we mentioned. We mentioned a couple of scenes as well. One scene I do want to talk about, and it's a slightly more serious aspect to this film, and maybe it's something that hasn't really aged that great in the film, and that's the use of sort of racial language and racist language when Ratchet, the police officer, is beating up Massive. Probably doesn't age great. I know it came out in 2001, but still, for a comedy film, I'm not sure that was really needed.
I'm not sure about this, actually, because I think that, first of all, it's obviously very timely and awful portrayal of racist abuse from a police officer, from a prison warden towards a black man. It's awful in that respect. But we have to remember, particularly at times like this, what racism is and how ugly it is and how disgusting it is and how jarring it is. And I think when it's in a comedy film, it's not to make light of that. It's basically to make that character so much more despicable, and for his ultimate comeuppance to be all the more enjoyable. Like, I think we'd be burying our heads a little bit to pretend that this stuff doesn't happen, particularly in prisons. And I think in that respect, it's certainly very jarring, and I'm not, you know, hearing the words is horrible, but I don't think that you should patronize the audience or patronize other people to pretend this stuff doesn't happen. Now, I appreciate that obviously people who have been subject to those words may feel very differently, and I completely understand that. But I think that they dealt with it, in my mind, very well, and it lent the film an edge, because otherwise it would have just been fairly plod along, kind of look at Vinnie Jones, here he is doing some tricks movie, and then Danny Dyer scores a goal. Like, it's a different thing. So I don't know what you guys think about that. But
I think you kind of have to be realistic with the representation, as Kieran said, to pretend that these things aren't said in prisons in those sort of circumstances. But it's not as if the film is endorsing the use. It's actually quite the opposite, where the comeuppance is quite clear, and we're not pretending that Vinnie Jones is some sort of white knight that comes in and rides to the rescue, and that's the way things should be resolved in real life. But it's made patently clear from an overarching point of view that they're very disagreeable to this use of language, and that's the point that they're trying to prove, that Vinnie Jones is sort of standing up against it. And I think that is, while they mightn't have had to stretch to use specific terminology that you've mentioned there, I think it made the point that bit stronger. And for that reason, I think it's probably fair enough on the whole scale of things.
So the general plot of this film is that, as we mentioned, Vinnie Jones is sent to prison, and the warden, the governor, wants to organise him to be the coach, but he doesn't want to do that, because he doesn't want to see to be favourable, be showing favourable, favourable relationship with the guards. So he decides to come up with the idea of a football match between the prisoners and the police officers, and it basically leads to several scenes of multiple montages of training drills. Vinnie Jones taking us through one of the most, I don't know, 1990s drill of all time, with one is right hand down, two is left hand down, three is both hands down. I mean, who hasn't done that in under eights? There are a couple of side plots to this, as we've mentioned. One of them is that the governor has himself wrapped up in a gambling addiction or a gambling issue with the mob, or we're not really told who it is. It's just some bookie. What do we make of that plot, Ronan?
Yeah, I think it kind of it brings an element of higher stakes to the crescendo of the film, which is obviously the match at the end. That it isn't just a case of the prisoners getting their own back on the wardens, but like to bring that extra element of gravity to it. I thought that was important. And the kind of, as you mentioned, the kind of the background element of the threats against his car, little bits like that, they just pepper those bits within the film to show that there is an element of gravity to it. And yeah, for that reason, I think it is an important plot point. Again, probably a little bit underdeveloped, but you know, given the time constraints we mentioned, they couldn't give everything probably the amount of screen time that it merited. But yeah, I think on the whole, it was probably an important element of the film.
Speaking about underdeveloped plots, what do we think of the love interest between the governor's secretary and Vinnie Jones?
Because that's a bit I couldn't.
There's one scene where she kind of eyes him up. That's like at the start of the film. And then the next thing, she's giving him the tapes to all the prisoners' training sessions, and they develop this love interest out of nowhere. It's just like it's 40 seconds of screen time that makes no sense to the plot, and they also go back to her several times during the match, listening to it, nervous as if something hangs on it for her. Nothing hangs on it for her. She has no skin in the game.
That's the one glaring thing I can't understand. Are we supposed to care about that element? Because I didn't care. And they just didn't, they gave no time to it. It's almost every time they went back to her, as you said, during the game, I'm like, well, what relevance is she to this entire plotline? I'm
disgusted with the pair of you. I think it's disgraceful that you can't let love be. That you can't appreciate a whirlwind romance for what it is and just let it be. No, it was ridiculous. And like, it's becoming a little bit of a theme. So it happened in Escape to Victory last week as well, where there's just this complete throwaway love interest for no reason. And also, I don't understand how the other cons realised that he basically just slept with her or whatever. He's just like straight back in, and they're all like, "Whoa!"
Well, you see, I'm going to bring it back to The Longest Yard, the Adam Sandler one, because in that, Adam Sandler sleeps with the secretary, but she's sort of a comedic value to it, and there's a videotape which the cons managed to get a hold off, as well as the prisoner tape. So that's where that comes in. But this doesn't make sense. There's no point to it. There's no gravitas to it, and it's just something. I don't know if they threw it in for Hollywood's sake or not, but that was one thing that really took away from this film, because it didn't make any sense. Some of the better scenes in this film, though. Where do we want to start? There's several top class scenes in this. My favorite one, or one of my favorite ones, is when Vinnie Jones is brought into his prison cell with Trojan and a couple of other prisoners, and they don't talk to him initially, and he confronts them about it. He's like, what's your problem? What have I done to you? And they said, it's not personal, mate. It's just, I don't effing like you. And it's just one of these one-liners in the film that really land, and there are several of those throughout the film. Ronan, the comedic value of this is definitely on the higher echelons.
Oh, yeah. And to borrow another term from that podcast that we're definitely not mimicking here, and the heat check, there's a few heat check nominees for it. Like, I thought Sykes was really good in the little bits that when he comes in and just drops a few brilliant moments in, like the one about he says something like, "That's the Scots all over on the farm when it suits them," and the next minute they're all misty-eyed and independent. talk about timely.
That's
really
brilliant.
Capturing the mood of the Scottish ethos there. But I think, undeniably, and you'll appreciate this, and it's possibly the best commentary team since Dodgeball.
Ah, stop.
The two Bobs.
I was going to mention it. They are the winners of this film.
Oh, unbelievable.
Just like, the constant...
Have you got any lines there? I think my favourite is, "Trojan evaded Mars and brilliantly. If only he could have done that the night he got Nick."
I've that written down as well. It's one of the best lines in the entire film. There's another one as well. "He must be ambidextrous, Bob." "Well, I don't know about that, Bob. He can certainly use both feet." Like, I think they capture the cliche commentary amazingly in this, with also adding in a few lines about them being prisoners, like just constantly referring to each other by Bob and every sentence is ended by Bob or book ended by Bob. Kieran, anything stand out to you?
Yeah, the one that stood out to me was Sykes talking to the Scottish guy about being on the phone and then being misty-eyed and independent. So sorry, just to completely regurgitate that line once again, but it was definitely the strongest line of the film from someone. I didn't really like him as an actor. I remember, I don't know if you lads had it over here, but there was a terrible like a kind of Channel 5 version of Emmerdale called Family Affairs, and he played a very similar character in that. And I just remember thinking, this guy is bobbins, he's absolute rubbish. But yeah, there are a few comedic light points. All right, anytime Danny Dyer's on screen as well doing his frenetic little puppy dog chasing a ball, it's always worth a laugh.
Well, we spoke about the referee in Escape to Victory and how he just wasn't worth his salt. The referee in this, he clamps down hard enough, but some of the tackles are still awful.
And isn't the point made by the governor that this referee goes to his country club and he's going to referee the game? And surely if you're going to fix the match, all you have to do is pay off the referee. But there's an absolute stonewall cast iron penalty for the cops. And it's not given. Like, he's cleaned out and there was no attempt to win the ball. So it's a straight red card as well. So like the prisoners are in all kinds of trouble if that's given. So I don't know. I think they could have, if they wanted to fix this game, they could have done a pretty clear cut job of it.
Danny Dyer's goal, is it the best goal never given?
Yeah, it was a hell of a goal.
Considering what he was portrayed as earlier on in the film, that was the equivalent of, I don't know, like a centre-back who has never been used to kicking a ball, scoring one of those worldlies.
Yeah. Can I just make one very quick point? They have a full-size pitch inside a prison. They've got a fully AstroTurf, like 4G pitch there for seemingly one game, although they do kind of hint that they do play amateur football. This is like the Daily Mail's wet dream, just like prisoners getting...
there were a couple of moments where I was just staring at the pitch and thinking, I'd love to play a game of football now. It looks unbelievable. Oh, cool. Apparently it's Yedding FC's old ground. That's... that is the pitch, but
it's not. Geez, that's not a ground that I would like to go visit. Then, that's what it looks like. That would be intimidating.
Yeah, can you do it on a rainy Tuesday night at Longhurst?
The game itself. Before I finish up, we have to touch on it as well. The longest game of football ever shown on a screen, I think, 30 minutes long, takes up. Like, that's why they run through the film so quickly. The plot points, Danny Dyer's background, Vinnie Jones's background. That's why they speed through it, because they want to get to a 30-minute football match on screen. Should it have been that long? It really felt like it was dragged out a bit for me.
I don't know. I thought it was pretty good, to be honest.
You can cut off 2 minutes straight away for Monk's random daydreams.
But, like... and you mentioned it didn't do overly well at the American box office, but unlike previous football films that we've covered, it does cater to your regular match-going fan, because there are actual sequences you can get involved in and near misses and some good technique, as I mentioned earlier. So I thought it was pretty good. And the goal, Kieran, to win the game was reminiscent of Brian McLaren's goal against Chelsea in the FA Cup final. In 1994, who rends the keeper? It's Paul Ince. Paul Ince rends the keeper, and rather than just slotting it in himself, he unselfishly squares it for Brian McLaren. So, Billy the Limpet, were you expecting him to burst onto screen, or did you know this film already?
Oh, I've seen it before. Yeah, like, this is a film that I would have watched a couple of times with my brother, but still, he deserves to be the hero of this film.
It's a terrible technique for a ball that is going across your body. Just basically completely slice the other direction and hope it goes where it goes. It's funny that you mentioned Brian McLaren there, actually, because I was reminiscent of that goal. A goal that I completely missed at the time, because BBC, when they were playing it, were showing a replay of the goal before. So they didn't show a replay of it. So for about 3 years, not having the ability to find out what the goal was, I can see. Anyway, a little bit of a personal tragedy there. But Dyer was good. It was nice to get him to get the little send off and carried away on the shoulders, and you know, all is right with the world.
We need to give this film a rating. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 34%. 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb, which is pretty good considering IMDb are pretty tough at times. 34% is a disgrace on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a disgrace. Yeah. Ronan Mullen, I'll give you first choice because this is a film you really wanted to do. Give it a rating out of 10, give it a rating out of 100, whatever your rating system is, just...
Yeah, I don't want to give a 10 out of 10. I'm tempted to, but you know, I'm going to try and maintain some sort of journalistic credibility here. I gave Goal 6.5 when we did that one, and I think it's at least 15% better than that. So I'm going to give it a solid 8 out of 10 for me.
That's the highest rating we've had so far. I don't even think Damned United have gotten that.
Oh well, I didn't review Damned United. I thought that was up there in the 8 territory as well.
Kieran Bradley,
what did you give Damned United?
That's why I didn't get the nod for the Damned United with this hysterical scoreline that you've got going on here. I will go for a... It was better than I remember. And so immediately I'm going to say that I was going in prejudice and thinking, well, I'm going to give this a 4. No matter what happens, I'm going to give this a 4. But it was better than I remember, so I'm going to... hopelessly mimic IMDb and go with 6.5. I thought there was a reasonably good, there was a good cast. There's a cast of people that I like. I also honourable mention for Omid Alili. I think is a very funny guy. And so I'll go with 6.5 for this one. Not as good as Damned United, but probably on a par with Escape to Victory.
I'm going to go in between and give it a 7 because the score in this movie is actually very good as well. It has a little bit of a mix between samba music when they're training and sort of evil sounding music when the prison guards are training, and also it ticks along nicely throughout the film. The cast is very good. The plot, it's iffy, and some of the acting in it is also quite iffy, as well as the Scotch will not be happy with this film at all. Between Jason Statham's accent, between that joke, and even between some of the other Scottish actors in this film who are actually from Scotland, their accents were terrible.
I actually think the guy with the long hair, the Scottish guy, I thought he was the best football player by a mile. I know you said you thought it was Trojan, but I thought in terms of his skills, like when they show a little kind of training-ish montage in the middle when he's trying to redeem himself in front of Danny Meehan. Yeah. And he was pretty good, and I'd be surprised if that wasn't actually just straight up taken from his abilities, you know?
Yeah, he was quite good. That's Jamie Sives. He plays Chive in the film, or Chiv, I don't know. And he's from Scotland.
Chive is just the worst possible name.
Like he's from Scotland, and his Scottish accent's worse than Jason Statham's. So I don't know where he pulled it out. I don't know if they're asking him to be a bit, I don't know, more difficult to understand, because at times Scottish people can't be. God, the Scottish are getting a hard time in this, but. We've gone way over time, lads, so we're going to wrap this up. I'm going to say that this film, 7 plus 8 plus 6.5, I'm going to give it an average of 7.5, which puts it on par with the Damned United, I think. So it's doing pretty well for Vinnie Jones' first leading actor role. It's doing pretty well. It did much better than I expected. Kieran and Ronan Mullen, thank you for coming on.
Cheers, lads.
We'll take a quick break. Now, you're very welcome back to Team 33. That is about all we have time for on tonight's show. Thanks to you for listening. We will be back again the same time next week. But if you want to listen back to any of that show, you can get it as part of the OTB Podcast Network on otbsports.com or on the OTB app, which you can find now in the App Store or Google Play Store. Back again, same time, same place. But until then, take it away, Johan.